We all know the trials of getting our first job, of somehow surviving in it. Due to the cutthroat competition, we cannot even get a job without self-boasting. One thing, we look for a security in job, but we fear competition from others. But the dichotomy is that we ourselves are also competing. And one aspect of this competition is that we are not only competing with another man, but also we are competing with machines. This competition with machine was started with industrialization. This has affected our joint family system and the home building. I would like to enumerate some of the violence that industrialization brings. As mentioned by J.C. Kumarappa, who was a devoted follower of Gandhi, he was an Indian economist and a qualified chartered accountant. He coined the word Gandhian economics. He says there are 8 kinds of violence due to industrialization. To shift the drudgery part of the work to someone else, reserving to ourselves the fruits of labor. To get raw material is the next one. And then to safeguard its transport to the place of manufacture. To dispose of finished goods. Economic cycle produced by various factors consequent to a large scale produce. Next, to safeguard investments of accumulated fortunes. To lay the burden of cost of armaments on the shoulder of third party. To coerce people to carry out a central plan. Now, these kind of ideas of industrialization is very similar to the ideas of the influential economist like Lord Keynes, whose macroeconomic theories are now run in the modern world, who during the 1930 Great Depression felt moved to speculate the economic possibilities of his grandchildren. He concluded that in future everybody would be rich. We shall then, he said, quote, once more value ends above means and prefer the good to be useful. But beware, he continued, time for all this is not yet. For at least 100 years or so, we must pretend ourselves and to everyone that fair is foul and foul is fair. I repeat, we pretend to ourselves and to everyone that foul is fair, fair is foul and foul is fair. Foul is useful and fair is not. Avarice and usury and precaution must be our gods for little longer still. For only then we can, only they can lead us out of the tunnel of economic necessity into daylight. Unquote. Mind you, this was written almost 90 years back. So we still have 10 more years for his dreams to come true. Now, earning money or amassing wealth cannot be classified as a black art, but amassing wealth can also be considered as a white magic. In the life of Gautama Buddha, there is a story. Buddha was residing in a place, and nearby village there was a Brahmana school, and his 500 youths who were training themselves according to their caste. They were full of disdain towards all others and spoke slightingly of Buddha. They challenged Buddha for a debate, and Buddha responded to the challenge and came with his bhikkhus. While they were waiting, they arrived at the scene, an old Brahmana and his wife begging for food. Buddha knew of the couple of old. He asked the youth if they knew who the old man was. His disciples replied, "We know perfectly. He was formerly rich, but took no care of his money, was foolish in using it, and look at him now. He is a fool." Thereupon, Buddha spoke, "There are four things difficult to do. Those who can do them will certainly obtain merit and escape poverty. They are related to the four ages of men. In the heyday of youth, don't be disdainful. Learn how to earn rightly. In the prime of youth, don't seek sense pleasures. Learn to acquire wealth and not squander it. Next, in the middle age, be mindful of charity." And Buddha gives a warning here. He says it is not easy to dispense charity righteously. Next, in the old age, seek the wise in the art of becoming a trustee of all your possessions. It is for the want of observing these four rules that this old Brahmana gentleman had come to his present condition and is like an old stork sitting beside a dried up pond. Again continued the Buddha, "There are four opportunities given to everyone to enrich life. In heyday of youth, seize the opportunity to make high moral reserves. In the prime of youth, seize opportunity to plan for a just distribution of riches. In middle age, seize opportunity for widening your capacity for gaining more merit. Lastly, in old age, seize opportunity to gain knowledge of the three honorable ones." The founders of the modern theosophical movement, H.P. Blavatsky, used to earn her living by writing for Russian magazine about her travels around the world. That money she used to donate to the Theosophical Society. W. Kwan Judge, one of the another founders, was a practicing lawyer. They used to earn their bread
if needed,
and also with daily work they produced all the vast theosophical literature which is for all of us to see. The founder of ULT, Robert Crosby, was also working in a bookstore and earned his living. Now, the idea of trusteeship is brought out in the life of Gandhiji. Gandhiji decided that he will not take any money for his public work. In South Africa, after completing the war duties of Boer War, he realized there was nothing much to be done and his main business might become merely money making. As his friends in India were pressing for his return, he decided to return to India. It so happened that he, with great difficulty, managed to persuade his employers and his community to relieve him of his duties. And they put a condition that should the community require his services, he should be back within a year. With lot of love, farewell was arranged for Gandhiji in many places. He was bestowed with expensive gifts like gold and silver. Gandhiji realized some of the gifts were from the clients whom he used to work for and others from the community. And he could not distinguish between his clients and the co-workers. Some gold necklace was given to his wife due to public work. He decided to forego all this in spite of the initial opposition from his wife. So he returned all the gifts between 1896 and 1901. The ideal of Sarvodaya or progress for all, as per Gandhiji, is not in vogue now. This is due to the fact that very few understand the underlying principle behind this ethics and economics. When these philosophical and metaphysical proposition is read, the ideas is only partially digested. But only when these are actually lived inwardly, which leads to the full appreciation of what is studied, and only then these ideas are fully assimilated and digested. We see that in Hinduism there is four Purusharthas. Four Purusharthas are the objects of human pursuit. They are dharma, righteousness or moral value, artha, prosperity or economic value, kama, pleasure, love, psychological values, and finally moksha, liberation or spiritual values. All the four Purusharthas are important, but in case of a conflict, the dharma is considered more important than artha and kama in Hindu philosophy. Moksha is definitely the ultimate ideal of human life. So we can see the ideal of right livelihood should have all the four pursuits with artha and kama subservient to the dharma. Just like all the atoms in the human body is subject to the general law governing the body which it belongs, so also we see with family, which is the smallest unit of the society. And the family life is similarly the aggregate of individual karma, which becomes that of the nation to which the individuals belong. And further, if we take this idea forward, the sum total of national karma is that of the world. So we can see the importance of family life affecting the life of the community and the world. What we think and do inseparably affects the family, community, and nation. As a result of our competitive system, selfish desires for gain and fame, our selfish thoughts and feelings have a deleterious effect on the mind, on others' mind, to everyone's detriment. Hence, karma of the individual is linked to the karma of the family, the community, and the nation. As reincarnation provides us many opportunities to overcome the defects, having earned the right to be born in a family where right livelihood is practiced would provide us such an environment to overcome these. Guru Nanak says there are three pillars of Sikhism. Naam Japo, which means to remember God constantly. Kirat Karo, hard and honest labor, to earn a livelihood by hard and honest labor. And finally, Vanche Chako, which would be to share their earnings with everyone through charity. Now, there is a general perception to look for spiritual learnings later in life. The four ashramas, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa, the idea is that spiritual progress can happen only in Vanaprastha and Sannyasa ashrama, away from family life. But this is an incorrect understanding. Without performance of duties in Brahmacharya and Grihastha ashrama, no progress can be made. There is a warning which we see in an old Sikh hymn which says, men ruin themselves by their search abroad, while the real thing is in their homes. The importance of Grihastha ashrama can be gauged from the fact where Manu, the lawgiver, says, as all creatures live supported by the air, so the three orders exist supported by Grihastha. Further, Manu says, Vedas declare the Grihastha to be the highest ashrama. As all streams and rivers flow to rest in the ocean, so all the ashramas flow to rest in the householder. The progression of the animal man to divine man depends upon man becoming human, and for the attainment of this purpose, the institution of the family and home comes into being. That is, the Grihastha ashrama comes into being. The triple line of evolution of man, physical, intellectual, and spiritual, can happen only at home. And man, since he has dual nature, there is a divine and the animal in each one of us. And to subside and transform the animal with the aid of divine, this alchemical process can take place at home. From the perspective of the Grihastha, the home is where the family has a chance to improve one's character and to control the wandering mind and finally practice better, able to help and teach others. All this can be implemented in home. Every family has a higher purpose of high ethical and moral living, apart from the other purpose of getting educated, getting a job, and enjoying the fruits of labor. To develop this higher purpose in the atmosphere of family, the atmosphere of family has a higher role to play. Has an important role to play. Only if the atmosphere is right, we can expect future generations to have responsible citizens of the world who can contribute to the general good of the society. By setting examples of earning and living by honest means, the family sets an example to the children as an ideal to live up to. It is up to the duty of the parents to raise children who are morally and ethically strong. Now, the institution of the human family provides for building of a pattern for the building of the state. Unless, as Confucius says, those who order their national life must first set about ordering their home life. Right livelihood, therefore, the civilization of today rests on finance. And to look at it from the financial and economic perspective, Buddha mentions that right livelihood is one of the path of eight noble path. And therefore, there must be something as Buddhist economics. Modern economics is based on multiplication of wants, and the ancient way is way of purification of character. Another area where we see that difference between modern and ancient system of idea of work. From the perspective of the employee, work is the sacrifice of one's leisure and comfort, and wages are a kind of compensation for that sacrifice. From the ideal from the point of view of the employer is that to have output without employees. And from the point of view of employee, it is income without employment. Therefore, there is a clash in this modern system. From the Buddhist point of view, work is to utilize and develop one's faculty. And this shows greater concern for people rather than goods. Now, a question we need to ask ourselves, can we be really happy without earning, or can we be happy with only leisure? To strive for leisure as an alternative to work is a complete misunderstanding. For work and leisure are both complementary to human existence. One cannot be separated without destroying the joy of work and the bliss which we get from leisure. We should regard work as that which provides a nourishing and enlivening factor in our lives. Disciplined work is something which nothing can actually replace. There is a middle way between the materialist headlessness and traditional immobility, which is, in short, finding the right livelihood. There is an international award instituted in Sweden in the year 1980 called the Right Livelihood Award. It is an alternate Nobel, but it is announced one day before the Nobel Prize for Economics is given. But it is not related to the Nobel Committee. Its object is to honor and support those offering practical and exemplary answers to the urgent challenges facing us today. The award is given in the field of environment protection, human rights, sustainable development, health, education, and peace. The past winners were Chipko movement of Dr. Sundarlal Bhavgana in 1950s and 60s. It was a non-violent Gandhian method to protect the forest and indigenous communities. Vandana Shiva, whom we know as the environmental activist, especially protecting the biodiversity of the indigenous seeds and protesting against the GMO, genetically modified organisms. Then there is Greta Thunberg, the famous child activist who challenged the world leaders to take immediate action on child climate change and draw our attention to it. Many such are there. One of them was Catherine Hamlin, an Australian doctor who dedicated her life for treating the poor patients in Ethiopia. So, with these ideas, I would like to open the floor for any discussions or questions.